Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. This Aspire radio program is being taped for May 17th, 2020. It will be aired then. And here we are in our quarantine, and many different people are dealing with it in all sorts of interesting ways. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, as I have gotten some very interesting emails about this. You know, the thing that is most interesting to me is how people are having such a difficult time being alone with themselves and that whole thing. So here we go, moving on. Some people can learn from these things, and other people have great difficulty. It all depends. A couple of things before we begin. In honor of all of this, to help those of you who might be interested, we are opening up the monthly breath journal to those of you who are interested for free. It's a way in which I can help, and if you find that you might want a different slant on the life that you are living and the living of your life, the breath journal is there for you for free, and I hope it serves you very well, and I hope you'll enjoy it. You go to the website at aspire.org, and there it is. You'll see the breath journal there and how to download it or to watch it or listen to it or do whatever you do to it. You can listen to the articles. There's all sorts of ways of experiencing it, so it's there for your help. Also, on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., if you would like to join us for our dialogue Saturday, I usually have a topic that I think is important, something that deals with whatever we're dealing with, and I hope you will join us. You can go to the website at aspire.org. You will see Saturday Discourse. You can Zoom it with us and join us, and I would be honored and privileged to have you there and to do that with you. Let's get to the questions, huh? I am surprised that I can't seem to adjust to all of this. This is Linda from Los Angeles. It just seems that my life is a ghost town now. Any ideas, Linda, LA? Well, I have all sorts of ideas. You know, I mean, what this whole thing is showing us, and I guess I'll just say it right out, is how we have occupied ourselves throughout our lifetime. We don't let life live us. We occupy life with desire, ambition, pride, vanity, our own agenda. And so because we don't know how to live in our life and allow it to bring about insight and compassion and love, we don't see it for what it really is. We tend to live our life in accordance with our emotional whims, our emotionality that is saying it can't be left alone. Linda, most of the questions that I get from people are about that very thing. They have a very hard time dealing with the whole effort of living their life in a quarantined way, not being able to go out and do what they want to do. And instead of getting angry about it, instead of getting rebellious about it, very few people are evidently, I guess, being introspective about it, which would be the wisest thing to do. That introspection, that ability to see what's going on, ask ourselves important questions like, why is it I can't be alone with myself? Now, that's a real doozy. And a lot of people just can't be alone with themselves. They have to be constantly occupied. So now, you know, HBO and the networks and all the dish things and everything become very important to people. and they just go into watching movies while they worry about whether or not they're going to have a job when this thing is all over, and how to feed themselves, that whole deal. This just goes on and on and on, and nothing ever really changes. So with all of that being said, we're going to have to deal with more than climate change. The real climate change is not only in the environment of our earthly existence, but is also in us. The climate that needs to change in me. And Linda, if I were you, I would sit with myself and maybe journal. There's lots of things you could do. You could sit and get a journal and a pen and just write every single thing that is crossing your mind. Just every single thing. Or you could sit in front of a mirror, which is what I have my meditation students do in the beginning, and look into the mirror and just write down every single thought that crosses your mind as you look into the mirror. You have to really stare into the mirror and detach from, you know, the appearances, and just write down every single thing that crosses your mind. You'll find out how your mind works, how, well, forgive me, vain and petty it is, selfish and unkind. And then you can see the repetition of thought over and over and over again, same thought, same kind of thought. And then you can understand what is pushing you. You see, what most people do when they have this kind of information about themselves is they don't push it. They look at it, they hear it, they see it, and they go, oh, man, you know, it's not my fault. This is just who I am. I need, you know, something to counteract all of this, this frustration, this cabin fever that people think they have. So they just go on and on and on instead of using this time wisely. I talk to my friends who are not in the practice, and they complain about the cabin fever thing, and I say, are you using your time wisely? And they're not. Oh, I've cleaned the garage out. How many times can you clean the garage out? Well, that's good to clean the garage out, but maybe it's time to look at life from a different point of view. Maybe it's time to take a look at what my philosophy of life is, and really look at, why do I need to be occupied all the bloomin' time while I'm living my life? I have to be occupied by a drama or some melodrama, or I have to be occupied by some desire, some ambition that I might have. I might be driven by my pride, my vanity. What is really going on with me? What is driving me? What is making all of this happen in me? And it's a very good thing to take a look at it. Now, most people can't do it. They can't look at what drives them, or what did drive them, or what accentuates their drives. They just can't do it. It's not in the cards for them. They don't have that kind of mental acuity to do that. So they suffer grievously. And I would say that is the majority of people in the United States. They have been spoiled and occupied for years and years and years with sports and entertainments and all sorts of things. And families are now fighting. There's shelters now for families that can't get along, you know, abusive stuff going on. This goes on and on and on. What are we to do? What are we to do with all of this? What is the cause of it? And that's the thing that most people don't do. They don't have a cause. They can't see, oh, I've got some emotional issues, some real problems, and they don't deal with them. They don't want to deal with them, and the reason they don't want to deal with all of this is because they don't want to think that they're anything other than their own ideal of themselves. And that's what philosophical presenters do. They try to change the way in which a person idealizes themselves, the way they look at themselves, and the way they have idyllic ideals about themselves. And with that being said, if anything breaks that idyllic ideal of themselves, and we really get to see that we're not the people we ideally thought we were or wanted to believe we were or are, then all sorts of poop hits the fan and we just shut down and go and watch a movie or something that we've seen 100 times, but we do it anyway because we have to be occupied. This need for occupation is dramatic, and pathetic on our part, but this is what happens to people who have technology and all sorts of distractions from who and what they are. They can't focus. You go to certain websites to read the news or whatever, read what's going on, and then there's another, somebody's always trying to upsell you on something, and then there's another article that's being flashed before you while you're reading the one you haven't even finished reading or even began. And I start to realize what... what the millennials have been through, and it's all about money, 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 and that's all it is. Linda, there you are. I hope that helped you in some way. I don't know if you'll do the little exercise I offered you. Probably not. And when you do it, then you're left with the idea, well, now what do I do? And you have to give me a call. Maybe I can help you. Please forgive me. Namaste. We don't take care of our within. We don't take care of our minds. We don't take care of anything that is pertinent to our well-being. We just don't take care of it. We want money to use in frivolous ways to make ourselves feel good and maybe occupy ourselves in a way that is entertaining. All we want to do is have fun. I was counseling with a guy a few months ago, and all he wanted was fun. He said, I just need to try to find a way to have fun. Well, it depends on what you call fun, and it depends on what you call having fun. And most people don't really get it. Next question, Ida. She does not tell me where she lives. The changes I've had to make are good. I'll never be the same again. I'm looking at this time to improve myself. Am I correct, Ida? Well, Ida, I'm no judge of what's correct and incorrect, but I like the way you're thinking, and I'm grateful that you see it as clearly as you do. I think that is very intelligent. And there will be many changes that most of us will have to make when this thing is all over. Changes we did not know we were going to have to make. Changes in the way we operate in our worldly environment, the home environment, our social environments. We're going to be needing to make all sorts of different changes. And how these changes will pan out or how they'll work, I do not know. They're going to be about how to get along with each other, for sure. That is for sure. How to love one another. How to help one another. How to rethink the idea that everyone is a stranger. How to rethink the state of mind that we have and adjusting to the idea that we need to be more global, as it were, more one with all, and to see that everyone that we talk to has an effect on us, and that everyone that we experience is important, all of that. So, yeah, that's pretty important stuff, and that's very daring of you to do. I'm glad that you're making these changes and that you see them as good. You're not specific about what those changes are, so that gives me the chance to just assume. So being that I am always looking on the bright side kind of guy, I'm going to assume that you are evaluating the changes you need to make within yourself. Oh, did I say that? not the outer changes, but I'm going to assume, making an ass of myself, that you're going to make some changes or have made changes that are significant to your happiness, and that the quality of your happiness might be changing. If my happiness is only for me to be gratified, that is not happy. That's gratification. But if my happiness equates to loving you more deeply, appreciating the idea that whatever you are, whomever you are, I am, I have the same tendencies, or I have the same attributes or inclination. If I'm looking at all of us as one, then that kind of change is very significant, very beautiful, very substantial. And that would be a wonderful thing to do. And I'm going to just goody-two-shoes my way into this and assume that that's what you're talking about. And if it's not, and you hear this, write me back and I'll fix it. And if you don't want me to use your name, I won't, but the die is cast. Do the thing that most brings about insight into your life. And what is insight? And why be embarrassed about the genetic attributes that we have? There's no need to be embarrassed about them. The need is to change my relationship to them. I can't change the genetics, but I can change my relationship to those genetics. I don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again in a genetic way where I'm constantly doing the dance of, in my case, the pen mentality that isn't necessarily always that cool. So if you want to change your mentality, if you want to change your life, if you want to change the way you operate and the way you live in compassion. Think of it this way, and Ida, this will help you. What can I do for them that I'd want done for me? If I needed help, if I needed some kind of strategy to help another person, what would be most important to me to help them? And if I can sense what I need, you're going to be pretty close to what they need, and you can help them even further. Say the things that you know would help them, that would help you. And just keep it that simple. What Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's just that simple. And I am sure you're making changes that you will never be the same again in. And that is very admirable. Most people are not like that. They want to make the changes that are in their benefit. You're making changes that will make it impossible for you to return to the way you were. And if you're making those kind of changes, dear, you're doing a really good job with your life and this whole pandemic thing. And I admire you and respect what you're doing. So there you are, Ida. Thank you for your beautiful question, and I hope you will forgive me. Namaste. Most people, they just sit and complain. That's what it's all about, is looking at their life and going, I wish I woulda, coulda, had a more funna. And this obsession that people have with being occupied with having more fun is absolutely absurd. Just, we're so immature. And if this pandemic is showing us anything, it's showing us how outmoded and absolutely stupid it is to think that we're here to have the same kind of fun we had when we were kids, little kids. That is just obsolete. Now we need to have a different kind of fun, something that enriches us beyond the ideas of our pedestrian mentalities, all of us. Last question comes from Thomas. He does not tell me where he lives. I found that helping others is the key to my boredom. So I do everything I know to do to help people that I am around. I don't go too far, but I think I go far enough. Thomas. And then he asked me for suggestions. Thomas, your last sentence kind of stuck a knife in me. You do what's comfortable to give and all of that, which is what most people do. They don't extend themselves fully. How far do you go? I've always asked this question, Thomas. How far do you go to help another person? Really, how far? Well, it depends what they need, huh? If they need money, how far do you go? Well, there's where we find out how we love and what keeps us from the journey. If they need our attention, how far do we go? Well, there we find out about our tolerance, our compassion. How far do we go when someone needs a favor? Well, there we find out exactly the extent of the gravitas of our own mind and our emotions. How far do we go? How far do you go? How far do you go to help someone? Hey, how far? An inch? A mile? 10 miles? It all depends, doesn't it? It depends on what I call the weather within us. And depending upon what that weather is and how much is needed or what is relevant to our time, we tend to look at it from that point of view. Would you drop everything to help someone? Would you? I was going to a concert years and years ago in San Diego to go see Johnny Mathis. And I like Johnny Mathis, and he was a wonderful performer. I don't think he's performing anymore, but he was magnificent. I had seen him a few years prior. And so we were going to a restaurant, and this lady, who I did not know, fell and broke her hip right there in San Diego, right on the street. And everybody was freaking out and everything. And I went over to see what I could do. And she didn't want an ambulance. I went, really? You don't want an ambulance? You know, somebody professional. I could have really gotten in trouble for this one. So what we did, she couldn't afford it. And so what I did with my friends is we loaded her up in the car, believe it or not, and I took her to the hospital and missed the concert. And as I was sitting there waiting to find out what was going to happen, I heard the story of a lifetime from her. And the real concert was to sit and listen to her and what she had been through in the course of her lifetime. And I'm not going to give you the details of it because it doesn't matter. But it was so touching to me and so meaningful. And she said, I'm so sorry I kept you from, you know, I looked at her and I said, it is more important to me to be here with you and have heard this story than to hear Johnny Mathis sing. And I learned something in that moment. I really did. It set me in a way, reset me like a person with a broken bone and it gets reset. I learned what putting away my plans meant for the sake of someone else and maybe in helping them. It changed my whole life. It really did. And I was terribly grateful to her, and I still am terribly grateful to her. She passed away many years ago, but we stayed in touch as friends. She was, in her mid-60s at the time. And I will never forget that. So I say this to you, Thomas. You never know the adventure you're going to be on when you help another person. And you never know the great good that could happen out of it. And this one changed my life. And though I didn't get to see that particular concert, what I did get was a life change that was most important for me and has affected me even to this very moment. That's it. I'm out of here, Thomas. Thank you for your question. I hope you could understand my answer. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, there's another week. Hey, I hope you have a beautiful, beautiful day. Take this time. You may never get it again to do the most beautiful things you can possibly do for yourself and for others. Please forgive me. Namaste.